Today, we want to work on, you know, what we say in the home. We're going to break down the script. I'm going to have Casey, you know, our sales guru here, break down a lot of kind of go through exactly what he says in the home, what he does in the home. You know, we were talking on a leadership call earlier, Casey, and you really only spend a day and a half in the field, but it seems like every single week you're coming in with 4 and 5 applications at a minimum for, you know, $5,000 in production. So, I've always felt that this is such a business of duplication that if people really know exactly what's being said and how your posture is and how your stance is and the things that you're doing and saying in the home, everybody can get those same results. Now, we will always say that the number one thing that you have to focus on is activity, tracking activity, managing dials, because that's what's going to set up a good week. You know, we can go over what to say in the home till we're blue in the face, but the key, Casey, is that you're sitting on and you're booking, you're not necessarily sitting on, but you're booking 10 to 12 appointments each and every week. Some of our top producers are booking 15 appointments week in and week out. And so that's where it has to start. And you know what? That's where, Casey, that's the one thing that you can control. We always say don't get beat by the things you can control. The one thing that will kill you in this business faster than anything else is not managing activity and tracking activity. And by activity, we mean obviously tracking the dials that you're making. It's a simple check mark. You know, how many dials are you making, Casey, every single week? That's the number that matters. Too often people tend to focus on the results and really what is the task at hand, what is the result at hand that we're looking for. And obviously the end result being production, the result that we can control is the number of appointments. And even more so than that, the number of dials that you're making. And a lot of times it can trick you. You think you're working a lot harder than you are. You're making more dials than you are. That's why it's so important to track the dials. We say 250 dials should easily yield 15 appointments. But you know what? If it took 500 dials, Casey, that's what it takes. And I know when getting started, you and I would both go through some of those weeks where you would have to make 300, 400, and 500 dials, and you would work 10 to 15 hours or 20 hours on the phone to go out and write 5 or 6 applications. And I've always said, man, even if it took 15 hours a week of being on the phone and I was able to earn a six-figure income by only being in the field another day and a half, 2 days, then what a great business. Yet so many people tend to get beat on the main thing that they can control, and that's activity. And I know that, you guys, we say it over and over and over again, but we say it because it is the most important thing in your business. Track your dials, know your activity. Don't allow yourself to get beat on the one thing that you can control, and that's how many times are you picking up the phone, how many times are you dialing it and getting someone on the other end. So, Casey, I think kind of in getting started, before we really even talk about what goes on in the home and what are some of the things that you're saying and maybe how are you overcoming questions or objections that come out in the phone, I think that's where it all starts, right?
Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, if I had the choice between – you know, choosing an agent to work with that makes 500 dials a week and gets himself in front of 15 homeowners every single week, and an agent that gets in front of 5 every week but is really, really, really good in the home, like everything he sits in front of, I would pick the guy that's mediocre in the home that gets in front of more people. Activity always wins.
Well,
what you lack in skill, you make up in activity, and that's what Brandon and I had always done. You know, we weren't the greatest in the home, but, man, we were sure going to sit in front of more people than anybody else.
Yeah, that's the whole deal, right? You got to get better at what you do. That's why you would take the guy that's has more control over his activity, because eventually he's going to be as good or better than the person you're talking about in the first scenario. So it's a no-brainer, man. It is a no-brainer. Why don't we kind of break down the phone script, and for those of you that would like to take a look at it, obviously you can go to the website, www.symmetryfinancialgroup.com, so you can kind of go along as Casey's breaking it down. I think that would be very important. Maybe before we actually get into the in-home script, Casey, why don't we take a look at, or talk about at least, what is your mindset when walking into the home? What are you kind of thinking? What's going through your mind as you're walking up to the door on each one of your appointments?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I think that is important to know kind of what, you know, what our top producers, what we're thinking when we go into the home, you know, to kind of give us your posture, I guess you could say. And so, Brandon, what's really going through my head is not so much whether I'm going to sell it or not. In my mind, you know, when I'm pulling into the driveway, I'm almost, call it cheesy, but in my head, it's very positive affirmations. You know, this is going to be a lay down, no problem. I'm just walking in here to help them fill out the application. That's my job, just to kind of find something that fits their budget, fits their needs, and I'm just the guy that can help them apply for it. I'm not selling anything. I'm not trying to convince them of anything. I'm just very assumptive, and so I'm just the caseworker that's assigned to the area. I'm almost like an $8 an hour employee. You know, if they don't want it, I could care less. If they do, I'll help them. But it's kind of I've got this very assumptive, just very. That's just my attitude when I'm going in the home, and I'm not really thinking about wonder if they're going to purchase this from me or not. I'm thinking about maybe what's going to come after the sale. You know, how many referrals am I going to get from this? Are they going to be sitting there with $50,000 in a CD that they're just not happy with the returns, and I can help them with an annuity or an old 401k or something that's not being matched and it's losing money, and I can help them find an annuity. So that's my posture. I'm not really thinking about whether I'm going to sell it or not. I know that's going to happen. I'm just there to help them fill out the application and then dig around and maybe find some more stuff. And I think that's important because people, that first, first impressions are everything. And so I want to kind of have that posture right when I walk into the home. It also helps me, Brandon, to have 15 appointments for the week, because when I walk into the home, if I got 8 more for the day or 4 more for the day or whatever, and I've already sold one, then I don't need it. You know, I'm not in a position where I have to feel like I have to talk these people into it. And I think that posture, it helps the homeowner to kind of be a little bit more at ease and not feel like they're being sold something. I always think of the saying, people hate to be sold, but they love to buy. I want to create an atmosphere where they feel like there's no pressure, but there really is, if that makes sense. And so that's what I do, and I do that through activity, because when I don't need this one, because I've made enough phone calls to where I have a lot more homeowners to fall back on, and I know I'm going to help somebody, it automatically gives me that kind of that stance when I'm in the house.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's important, because people, if they like you and they can feel comfortable with you and they can tell that you're confident, then when they like you, then again, it goes back to that the stance is, when they like you, they'll trust you. And when they trust you, they'll stop giving you these objections. And so you want us to cover a lot of these objections. Today, I think a lot of these objections will be dismissed with the right amount of activity and with the right posture when you walk in the home.
Right.
But that being said, once you get that done, that's where now we can kind of concentrate on the actual script, because I think it's important. I think that gives you confidence in itself to know step one when I go in the home is this, step two, step three, step four, step five. And to this day, Brandon, when I go in the home, I'm following a script in my head. The outline that's on the website is in my head, and I do it step by step, and I know you do the same thing, and it works.
Yeah, you do the same thing over and over and over again. And I was going to say, when you were talking about what is your mindset and kind of what are you thinking about when you're going in the house, you know, a good sign that your activity is where it needs to be is that you're, you know, constantly looking at that lead, making sure that you remember their name and you're calling them by the right name, because you've got so many appointments for the week, or you've seen so many people, or you're yet to see more people. So
yep.
That's where it all starts. It all starts with the activity, and then it all starts exactly like you said. You got to have the right mindset, got to have the right frame of mind, and that you're going in there just to give these people whatever they need. They fill the form out. They know what they're looking for. Now it's a matter of, are they going to like you? Are they going to trust you? And one of the things I always like to do, Casey, when I'm sitting in the home is a great way to warm up to people is try to teach them as much as you can about the business and about, the differences in products and that sort of thing, because people love to kind of be educated and know what they're getting into. And that's one of the reasons, I think, Casey, that you and I can go and close, 9 out of 10 appointments that we're sitting on. And I do want people to understand that maybe it hadn't always been that way. You know, obviously you and I have been doing this for a long time. You will get to a point where you're closing 85 to 90% of the people you sit with. It will never change in this business that the most challenging part is getting in front of them. Right, Casey? You're going to have people no-show you. You're going to have people that want to cancel. You're going to have people that port you. All of those things happen, which is why it's so important to have 10 to 12 appointments each and every week, so that you can make up for the 2 or 3 or 4, or even on a horrible week, of the 5 people that hey, something just came up for them and they forgot. You know, last week, Casey, it was the same thing. I had 10 or 11 appointments and four or five of them had to reschedule, and they were all legitimate excuses. Things like soccer practice came up that they didn't know they had a game for their children, or somebody got held up at work, or, you know, somebody had a leak in the roof and now the roofers are over there and they just wanted to do it this week. All of those things are going to happen. It's always going to come up. It always seems to me, Casey, if I've got three or four appointments for the week, that it's going to be those three or four people that it happens to. If I've got 10 to 12 appointments for the week, then I don't have nearly as much to worry about there. So,
exactly.
Let's go ahead and get started, man. You've got an in-home appointment script. We've got the outline there because I think it's important that people understand also that it's not necessarily that we want people to kind of memorize a script and you're saying just these words. That's not as important. It is very important that you follow an outline so that there's so that there is a script that you can follow and a process that you follow, and it kind of keeps you on pace. And, you know, a lot of times I've heard of new agents that have this in-home appointment script either, you know, attached to the lead on the table so they can follow it or on their computer screen so they can take a look at it. But it is important that you follow these things. And once you kind of understand how the guide works and how the outline works, we really want you to be personal. We want it to be your personality that comes out. It is just important, though, to follow the script. So why don't we break it down, buddy?
Okay.
I'm going to let you kind of run with it, and I'm going to jump in a good bit, I'm sure.
Okay. Sounds good. Step one, when I go into the home, is kind of a mix between just kind of walking towards the kitchen table, but also just kind of warming up with them in the process. And I'm just trying to be myself as if I'm just, you know, meeting a new friend. And I'm not trying to force anything with trying to warm up to somebody and, you know, make it cheesy. If they seem like they want to talk, then I'm going to talk with them. If they seem like they want to get down to business, then I'm not going to force it, because generally that has the reverse effect on somebody. They know what you're trying to do. And so I just kind of mirror a little bit as I'm walking to the kitchen table. But I'm always nice, but at the same time just very professional and ready to get down to business. Remember, I got 8, 9, 10 other appointments. Like I told them, I was going to be with other homeowners in the area, so I want to make sure they understand that. So I just kind of get to the kitchen table, and then I basically at this point what I do is I plug my laptop in. I never want to be sitting at the couch or you know, anything like that. I want to do the business at the kitchen table, okay? And so I'm going to, because that's where business is done. So,
and also, Casey, if you've got, you're sitting at the kitchen table with the TV's on in the background and it's real loud, you'll take the time to ask them to turn it off or turn it down or those.
Yeah, you know, this is where I kind of set control a little bit. You know, I'm not afraid to say things like, guys, I got, you know, I got ADD here, so that TV will get me sidetracked. This is going to take a lot longer. Can we cut the TV off or cut it down or something like that? I'm not afraid to say that. I'll say it very nicely, but at the same time, I'm kind of in control of the whole process here. I'm in their home, but I'm in control of what we're doing because I'm the one with the license. I'm the one that, by law, has to be there and witness signatures and ask them health questions. That's the insurance companies require that. So I have to be there for this, and so I want to make sure that I have their attention, but I'm going to be nice about it. And so, but that helps with control, and I think, you know, that's important. So it sets the posture there. Again, it's nice, it's warm, but it's just kind of, let's get down to business. The second step, Brandon, I'll go into here, is basically as I'm kind of opening up the laptop, turning it on, plugging it in if I need to, I usually pull out two applications. Even if it's not with the exact insurance company I'm going to be maybe doing business with at this point, helping them apply for, I still like to have two applications out. And I'll have a pen, and I'm going to have the lead. And I'm going to flip the lead over, and I'm going to start writing on the back of it. And that's where I move into my second step, which is verify information. And I think it's important for everyone to know what is on the table, because when I first got started, Brandon, I would have like a little notepad out, and or I would have a business card, or I would have a little product brochure, because I felt like I needed that to help me if I needed to explain something. Guys, anything like that can be used as a crutch for the homeowner to take and say, well, let me read over this, and I can, you know, we'll talk about it, we'll sleep on it tonight, and we'll talk to you. I want to control the environment, I want to eliminate any crutches. And a business card even a notepad where you've written all the options out very well, that can be used as a crutch. You know, can you rip that out for me and leave that with me? Or a pamphlet or anything like that, off the table. I don't have anything like that out. Now, I will leave my card when I'm done, that kind of thing, but I'm not going to have anything out. I'm going to control the environment. So when I flip the lead over, that's when I just start to kind of verify some of the information. And so we'll just kind of get in the frame of mind here, Brandon. I'll just say, so Brandon and Meredith, let me just verify a little bit of information here before we get started. Brandon, what was your age right now?
33.
And how about you, Meredith? And Meredith is?
30.
30. Okay. And Brandon, do you use any tobacco at all?
Nope.
All right. Have you used tobacco in the last 12 months?
Nope.
Okay, good. And neither has Meredith?
Right.
Okay, good. I like to say in the last 12 months because sometimes, Brandon, people will say, nope, don't use tobacco. And you'll get into the application where asked in the last 12 months or 24 months, depending on the company, and you already quoted them a non-tobacco price, and they say, yeah, I quit 2 weeks ago. I don't use tobacco. So I always like to make sure I know if they did use tobacco, when was the last time they used it. The next thing I'm going to ask about is height and weight. Like if I'm sitting there and I'm looking, I can tell they're maybe a little bit on the heavier side, or maybe really on the skinnier side, or something like that, Brandon. I'm maybe asking their height and weight right here too, if it's not already on a lead.
Yeah.
I don't want to get a curveball later on, and again, once I've quoted them something, and then realize that I'm going to get them declined or rated way up or something like that because of their height and weight. So, if we have anything a little different there, then I'm going to ask for height and weight, and then I'm going to get into health. Now, in the verify information, in this second step, this is probably one of the most important parts because this health is going to tell me which direction, which company, which product I'm going to sell. So I want to listen very closely right here, Brandon.
Right.
And I'm listening for medications. You know, so I'm going to say, Brandon, I guess one of the most important questions is how's y'all's health? And sometimes they'll say, oh, real good. Okay, don't move on to the next step. Don't move on to start showing them options. Okay, great. Any major hospital stays, any surgeries or anything like that in the past 5 years, Brandon?
No.
Okay. How about in the past 10 years?
No.
Okay, good. Any health problems at all? Do you take any medications for anything, Brandon?
No medications.
No medications. So have you ever taken any medications for anything in the past 5 or 10 years?
No, nothing other than just, you know, minor cough and cold type stuff.
Okay, good.
Antibiotics or something like that.
How about background stuff, like bankruptcies, anything like that?
Nope, and I'm glad you went to that, Casey, because that's definitely one of the things I would be asking, too, is DUIs, you know, bankruptcies.
It especially when I'm sitting there with somebody that's really healthy, no medications, no anything, that always goes to the back of my mind, like, you know, this is a good situation, you know, and I just want to cover all my bases before I start showing options because I've sat there in front of somebody extremely healthy and got excited, man, this is going to be a laydown, it's going to be easy, I can get them something real good, and then they throw me a curveball because there's a DUI or there's a bankruptcy and I've showed them the wrong company and I need to switch gears or something. So I like to cover all my bases there. So how about background stuff, felonies, you ain't been in jail lately or anything like that, have you any DUIs, DWIs?
Nope.
Okay. And we're just assuming that I'm asking Meredith all the same things too. Okay, at this point, I in my head, and again, this might take a little bit of experience, but that's, again, one of the cool things about the law of averages is they tend to get better as you have more appointments with this. In other words, your close ratio might be 50% right now, but the more appointments you sit on, the better you get, your skill improves, you start to become closer towards that expert, and you start to have a better close ratio. So things will get better, but... Brandon, in my head, what's going through my head right now is which product I'm going to go with. But before I do that, I like to move to step three. And so I'll say, so Brandon, what is y'all's main concern? What do you want this to do for me? Because until I know this, this may change what I show them as well.
Right.
So step two is verify, get some good health information. What medications are they taking? Dig around right here. You may know what you're going to show them at this point, but I still like to move to step number three because this is going to give me a little bit more information. Step number three is the why, meaning this is where I want to kind of resurrect that emotion that was in the was in place when they opened that mailer up and saw it and decided to fill it out. There was an emotion that went through Brandon's head, and it was either love or it was fear or something like that happened, and Brandon said, you know what, I love my family. If I die, I don't want to leave them behind with too many bills. So I want to make sure this thing is paid off. That's an emotion, and this stuff is bought out of an emotion. And so I need that back on the table before I move into step number four.
Right.
And I really spent some time here, Brandon. I think this is probably the most important step in the whole appointment script.
Yeah, I agree. And it goes back to the thought, Casey, that if you could be with the clients in their home with them when they were filling that form out, maybe it was a week ago, maybe if you're working bonus leads, it was 6 weeks ago, or however long ago it was. If you could have been there when they were filling that form out, what percentage of those people do you think you could sell? And the answer is, well, gosh, I feel like I could sell easily 90% of them, assuming that we could get into their budget, right? So that's why getting to the why and verifying that, getting the emotion on the table is so important, because we have to get back to where they were when they knew that there was a need for it. And what you'll find, Casey, is that if you get the answer that you want here, which is, well, I just need to make sure that if something happens to me that, you know, my wife is taken care of, or something happens to both of us, either one of us, then the mortgage is taken care of. If you can get that answer, then the rest of it is all about price. It's just playing the Price is Right, right? And there's some sales that's involved in that, obviously, you know, understanding critical period concepts and understanding kind of old versus new, which you'll get into here in a second. But if you can get that question answered, your job is about 90% of the way done.
Yep. And so I'm looking for an emotional answer here. You know, this guy doesn't want to leave his family high and dry, and maybe it's a fear that, you know, he doesn't want to be known as the guy that left his family with a huge mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he may even relate a story right here about something that I remember. I was sitting with a guy the other day, and I kept digging on the emotion because he wasn't giving me a whole lot. And finally, he just kind of opened up, and he said, you know, had a buddy at work the other day that got in a car accident and messed himself up pretty bad, had some serious back problems now, and he can't work. And so, you know, I got to think that he was tight before, and now that he's not working, you know, is he going to be able to keep his home? So stuff like that goes through these people's minds. I want them to talk about it. So I'm going to keep asking. I'm not just going to take a simple, yeah, in case I die, I want my house to be paid off. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I might look at Meredith at this point and say, Meredith, would it be tough for you to make the mortgage payment if something were to happen to Brandon? Yeah, I'm going to get her involved here. I want to focus on both of them. A lot of times your natural instinct when you're in the home is to kind of focus on the person that is easier to focus on, the person that's giving you more attention, kind of a little bit easier to talk to. They're nodding. That's generally the person that you need to spend the least amount of time focusing on. So it's just a balance. You want to make sure that you're including both the husband and wife here. That's always kind of going through my mind. And so I'm getting both the husband and wife involved, which, by the way, both husband and wife are there. That's important as well. Don't want to be sitting there with just one or the other there. I want to make sure both of them are there. Both decision makers are there. I've had people say, no, I'm the decision maker. It'll be fine. Just come. And I get there at the end of the presentation. Well, I need to talk to my wife about this, you know. And so I always want to make sure I have both of them there, but definitely make sure you include both of them. So I'm getting that emotion on the table. And once I get it there, Brandon, that will give me an idea of kind of what I'm doing. In my head at this point, I know which way I'm going to go. And so I move into step number four, which, by the way, if you want, we can cover a little bit of, you know, what if somebody's in perfect health? What direction are you going to go right here, Brandon? What if somebody's in, you know, maybe takes a couple medications, maybe one for high blood pressure, one for high cholesterol, maybe a couple, maybe a thyroid medication or something like that. Which direction are we going to go? And then what are we going to do if there is some pretty good adverse health?
Yeah.
What do you do
I'm...
if there's somebody in, if I'm sitting there, Brandon, and there's perfect health, no medications, no problems whatsoever? What's your product as far as where are you going? What type of product?
Well, I want to go non-med as much as I possibly can. Even if they're in perfect health, you know, the facts are that they don't really know how great their health is unless they just saw a doctor. But, you know, if somebody's in perfect health, I'm still the first thing I'm going to show would be, you know, a mortgage protection policy. And I'm going to load it up, and I'm going to put disability, critical illness, return of premium. I'm going to show them all of those benefits. If they're healthy, now's the time to get it, Casey. You know, if they've got some
you know, some mild conditions, but they're still through table four, then obviously I'm still thinking non-med mortgage protection, either ING, American Amicable, Americo, Mutual of Omaha, whatever the company of choice is. That's always going to be my first option. If they, at this point, it kind of opens up that they've had some health challenges, you know, either within the past 5 years or 10 years or whatever the number may be, we may have to, at this point, switch to the critical period concept, which I know you'll go over that in just a minute. But, you know, I'm going to go non-med 90% of the time. If I can get non-med, that's what I want to do. The only time that I may switch to fully underwritten is, again, if I'm talking with the person that's in perfectly good shape, they're in, they see a doctor very regularly, they saw a doctor not long ago, we know that they're healthy, we know what kind of shape they're in, and it is a price issue where they're saying something like, well, gosh, I saw this, you know, with another company and it was this amount, or, you know, that's just a little more than I'm wanting to spend or whatever the case may be, then I may pivot over to fully underwritten. And, you know, if I, in other words, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to get a sale leaving the house. If that means I've got to go to an ING or a Transamerica or whoever it is that does fully underwritten, and I've got to beat someone else's price, maybe it's I've got to offer them a preferred rate. Whatever I've got to do to at least get an app in hand, I want to give myself a fighting chance to get the business, you know.
Okay.
It doesn't happen very often, Casey, and I think the danger with new agents is that a lot of times they kind of go in with their wallet and they're thinking, well, that's just way too expensive for this person, when in reality it's not. The difference between getting a standard rate fully underwritten and getting a standard rate non-med is typically not that much,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there's also other benefits that kind of go along with that that make it worth it to go non-med. Not to mention, how many of the cases that we see submitted fully underwritten never get approved, not because they actually get declined, but just because the client never does the blood work or never does the underwriting requirements, whatever they may be. So, you know, they may tell you sitting there at the table that they're willing to do all of that, and then, you know, as it turns out, they may not want to go through any of that stuff. So non-med 90%
of
the time.
Most of these companies, historically, Brandon, have, you know, about 70% of the applications that come in where the person has to go take a physical and all that, they say about 70%. So if you send in 10 of them, statistically the insurance company's ratio is 7 out of 10 of those will come back either declined, rated up, not taken, or something that is negative.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to sell 10 policies and have 7 of them come back where I'm not even going to get paid on it, and the person's not even going to get covered. And so I think it's important to understand that it's a very kind of last-ditch effort, but you're saying stick them in something that's simplified issue non-med. Now, let me ask you this, Brent. If I'm brand new and I'm listening to this and I'm going, yeah, but how do I know? If they're sitting there telling me that they got this medication, I don't know what those medications are for. Even if they tell me what they're for, I don't know if that's going to fit in the criteria to see if it's going to get issued. How did you learn to get through this kind of product placement? What's the best thing you can do as a new agent once you get in the home and somebody gives you some medications and that? What do you do?
Well, you know, I always want to maybe stick with an American Amicable non-med, like the mortgage, the home protector, something like that. But you always just want to tell the client, hey, listen, this is really step one. This is our first option. There's a chance the insurance company won't accept this application. They may try to charge you more money or decline it. If that happens, I'll be right back out and we'll do something different. But what you really want to do is try to talk with the person that brought you into the business. Try to get them on the phone. If they throw you a curveball and it's during business hours for the insurance companies, don't be afraid to call the insurance company and get a risk assessment even while you're sitting there with a client. There's several things,
Brandon,
that you can do, but I think the main thing is do it and learn from it. We don't have to actually, if you've got an application that's questionable, like you're not sure if they're going to accept this or not, shoot your manager an email or shoot us an email if you're direct to the company. Whatever you have to do, communicate with us and say, hey, how's this look? What's going to happen with this? You know, chances are we may say, hey, that shouldn't be a problem. We also may say, that's going to be a little bit difficult. I would go back out and write this. That UHL term product that goes up to $50,000 for 20-year term is unbelievable.
But there's also the UHL regular term products that go through Table 4. But, you know, I think the beauty of being a broker, Casey, is knowing the applications. You know, some companies ask in the past 10 years, some companies ask ever. Home Protector asks in a lot of health questions for the past 7 years. UHL's application may only ask for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So as a broker, and you'll get into this on how you kind of explain your purpose, your role and purpose in step four, but as a broker, that really is our job. Number one, our job is to get them covered, get them what they can get. Number two is to find that at the most affordable price. Okay?
Yep.
So never lose sight of that. A lot of people will kind of roll to fully underwritten too quickly, and they haven't taken care of their job first, which is get the people covered, get them protected. And a lot of that, Casey, is how you set it up, what are you saying in the home, you know, how much time are you spending on these areas? And I know you'll kind of get into that.
Yeah.
But I think the answer, that was a long way of answering your question, but the real answer is short and sweet. It's just go get bloody, learn from your mistakes.
Yep.
That's it.
I can't tell you how many times I picked up the phone and still do it. I called you the other day from a home, Brandon. I got
yeah.
a guy here that's got this problem. What do I do? You know, and say, so I'll learn from that. And next time it comes up, I don't have to call anybody. But you're going to run into those situations out in the field. And that's why, again, activity is so important, because you get in front of 10, 15 people, you start to see that it's the same things that are kind of going over and over, and you'll start to get a lot more comfortable with it, and you'll get less and less curveballs that cause you problems in the home. So once I verify that needed info, which is step number two, step number three is get the emotion back on the table. Go ahead.
Let me back up, because I want to say one more thing to that, because really what you're trying to do in that scenario is you're trying to get them committed to a price. See, I know that I've gotten someone at $125. Even if I come back to the office and I realize, well, that's not going to be good because that's going to get them declined, I'm not going to send that application in, right? I'm going to hold that. I'm going to go back out and sit down with them. I'm also not going to try to call the client over the phone and try to sell them on something else on the phone. Set another appointment, go back out, sit down in front of them, and, you know, they've already committed to a price. Now that's when you've got to be a good salesperson and helping them to understand we can't get, you know, a 30-year, $100,000 policy for this price, but what we can get is 5 years' worth of mortgage payments or 3 years' worth of mortgage payments or $50,000 of coverage, whatever it is. You know, last week, Casey, it was the same scenario. I wrote a policy for a gentleman with American Amicable. He got declined. He had some things in his past that we didn't know about, we didn't talk about on the application because it didn't go back far enough, but for whatever reason, the insurance company declined that application. Went right back out. It took me about 2 weeks to get back in his house and was able to do a Forester's plan right, and it's already been approved and already been paid. So it really
awesome.
Tells you, and that was last week, so it really tells you how quickly those products can get placed. But again, what we're trying to do is get them committed. Even though you're not asking for that commitment, really what you're doing is you're getting them committed to a price.
So step number three is once I get that emotion on the table, then step number four is explain my role and purpose. And what I do here is I basically say, you know, let me explain my role here. Just so you guys know what my job is, I'm what they call a field underwriter, which basically means I'll show you what your options are, and, you know, when we find the option that best suits your needs and your budget, I will help you apply for it. I'm actually a broker for mortgage protection, which means I have access to several dozen top-rated companies. And what that means for you guys is that my job is to find you the best coverage that you will qualify for at the best price. And now, this is not the old kind of mortgage protection. What I mean by that is your lender will not be the beneficiary here. Meredith will be the beneficiary. One of the other major differences is that this is not a decreasing term policy. In other words, if something happens to you tomorrow or 10 years from now or 15 years from now, your death benefit will stay the same. That won't change. It won't decrease down with your mortgage amount. So, and because Meredith is the beneficiary, this policy will be portable. You guys own it, which means if you guys refinance in 5 years or move in 5 years or sell the home and buy another one, you guys can take this coverage with you. You don't have to start it over 5 or 10 years later, and it costs you more. So this is going to stay the same cost. It's going to be based on your age right now, and it moves with you wherever you guys go. Does that make sense, Brandon?
Yep.
Okay. So what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to move into step number five here. Now, at step number four, after I get done with this, if I know that I'm going to have to kind of sell a lot lower of a death benefit, this is where I'll go into critical period coverage. Meaning, if I'm sitting there and Brandon has a $100,000 mortgage, but he's 76 years old and has some health problems, I know that I'm not going to be able to sit there and show him a $100,000 loan. So, at what point in the presentation do I flip over to my critical period script? Well, this is it. This is where I'm going to do that at. And, you know, my critical period script, Brandon, I basically, you know, I say, this is how it sounds, I'll say. So now that you know what my job is, Brandon, as a broker, keep in mind that, you know, it's not just finding what you'll qualify for. I don't want to get you declined for coverage. And with mortgage protection, there's really kind of two options we have here. There is the mortgage payoff plan. And unfortunately, Brandon, I don't think we can get that for you. If we could, Brandon, it'd probably be, you know, more than your mortgage payment. It's not a very popular option these days for this particular situation. The second option, however, is very popular with homeowners in your same situation and generally a lot more affordable, okay? It's what they call critical period coverage, and this is just in reference to that critical period of time after the loss of, you know, a spouse or a loved one when somebody is at the most risk of losing their home. Let me explain that. Brandon, if something were to happen to you tomorrow, heaven forbid, does the bank go to Meredith and ask for the full $100,000?
No.
They don't, right? All they want is that $800 mortgage payment, right? That's your mortgage payment is $800. So people go into foreclosure. Homeowners are going into foreclosure not because the bank is coming to you, Brandon, and asking Meredith for $100,000, right? All they want is that $800. It would be nice if the bank would call you up, Meredith, and just say, heard about your loss and offer to cover 6 months worth of mortgage payments for you so you don't have to worry about it, but they don't do that, do they? So that's what critical period coverage does. This policy is actually going to do for you a couple different things. The most important thing it does is it buys you time to grieve properly. You know, the last thing we want you to think about, Meredith, you know, if something like this happens at the funeral here, we don't want you to be thinking about the mortgage payment. That's the last thing you need to be worried about at this point. So it gives you time to grieve. The second thing it gives you time to do is it's time to make a plan. You know, maybe we have to sell the place. I know maybe you don't want to do that, but if you have to, you have to. And let's face it, you know, houses aren't exactly flying off the market right now, right? And so would you rather get what the house is worth, or would you rather get what just what you can get for it in a pinch, right? And so it gives you time to protect the equity that you have. Guys have obviously worked for a long time to create in this home, right? Brandon, your home's worth more than 100 grand, right?
Yeah.
What did it appraise for last, do you remember?
About 130.
So you got $30,000 of equity. That's 30 grand that could go to Meredith, but if you have to sell it tomorrow because we can't afford to make the mortgage payment, then whose 30 grand is it now, right? You don't get that 30 grand. Or heaven forbid the bank takes it away, whose 30,000 is it now? Right? It's the bank's. And so it gives you time to protect that equity in your home. And now that equity, that 30,000 can actually become more benefit for Meredith to help her with maybe another home or something like that. So it just buys you options. And like I said, generally it's more affordable. So that's my critical period kind of concept. Sometimes I'll throw in the Titanic illustration there. You know, Brandon, kind of like if we were on the Titanic and it was going down and all the lifeboats were full of women and children, but there was a little round tube there, a little round lifesaver, would you, Meredith, would you grab that? Or would you just try to tread water until safety came, right? It would buy you time, and that's exactly what this critical period coverage does, is it buys you time to figure out what you're going to do and helps you stay above water. Does that make sense, Brandon?
Yeah.
And when I say that to the homeowner, if they say yes, man, about 80-90% of the time, I'm going to walk out with an application and a check, and it may just be for $15,000 worth of coverage on a $100,000 mortgage, and all that may do is buy them 2 years worth of mortgage payments. I walked out of a home the other day, Brandon, on an 82 or 83-year-old man, was not married, had kids, though, that lived up north. They weren't going to keep the home, but he wanted them to be able to take the equity out of it. and I sold them, I think it was $8,000 of coverage, and the premium was a couple hundred bucks a month. It was $8,000 of coverage on a $200,000 home or $200,000 loan. So if I had sat there in the beginning and said, Brandon, how's $8,000 sound of coverage on your $200,000 loan? You'd probably laughed at me. But It's not what it is, it's what it does. You have to get good at selling what it does, and you can do that with critical period coverage when you have to drop the benefit down. You can do that when you're selling critical illness. I mean, I do it with everything I sell, Brandon. I kind of help them. I put them in that picture, and I try to paint a picture for them, and I put them in it. And I do that with all the riders, but it especially is helpful when you're having to drop that death benefit down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I go into critical period coverage. But now if I'm not going to go into critical period coverage, then I'm just going to go over the step number 5 in the script. But my critical period coverage, I usually just show 3 options right off the bat, Brandon. Option A will cover 2 years' worth of mortgage payments. It's $187. Option B is going to cover you for, a year's worth of mortgage payments. It's $100. Option C is going to cover you for 6 months' worth of mortgage payments. It's $50. Which one of these 3 work better for you? That's kind of my close. Brandon, are you about the same?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So if I'm not going critical period coverage, then I move into the think about it. So after I've explained my role and my purpose, I move into step number 5, and that's where I say, Brandon, I'm going to start by showing you guys the comprehensive coverage. And I'm not doing this to talk you into spending more money than you need to. But I don't want to assume that you guys don't want the absolute best coverage for you and the family. So if what I show you is more than you want to spend, please let me know. Okay? Sometimes homeowners will beat around the bush and say things like, I need to think about it or sleep on it or pray about it or whatever. Guys, I've been doing this long enough to know what that means. It means the price isn't right. So if what I'm showing you doesn't fit the budget, please tell me. This is just the first option, and we'll definitely find something to fit your budget, okay?
Gotcha.
Step number 6 is explain the benefits and show the options. So I explain the benefits that are available to them. Again, I'm very careful not to mention benefits that may not be available to them. I don't want to do that, but, if their age or their health or something kicks them out of getting a benefit. Like I remember one of the agents that started a couple weeks ago, and I probably did the same thing when I got started, Brandon. He had sold the homeowner on return of premium. He started explaining his benefits, sold the homeowner about how awesome return of premium is, and it is, but it just so happened the guy was like 72.
That's not good.
He's not going to be able to get return of premium. It's not available to him. So you want to make sure that you kind of play. That's the importance of practice, drill, and repeat. And we always tell new agents to do that, practice, drill, repeat, practice, drill, repeat. Before you go into homes, get yourself 2, 3, 4 presentations under your belt on your family, and you never know, you might end up selling a policy to them and helping you with your cash flow right off the bat. But practice drill repeat. I play with the software. I'm running little options, I'm coming up with little scenarios. I'll scroll through my leads and I'll run through some options pretending I'm sitting with them. What if this guy is 72 and he's got a couple bad health problems? What do I do here? And so I'll run the software, so that'll help you there. And then I start with option A, Brandon, and that's the loaded plan. And it may be $400 a month. It may be $800 a month. And if that option is too expensive for them, then I'm going to move to option B. If option B doesn't work, then I'm going to move to option C. And I'll continue if necessary. But I try to eliminate them and get them out of the way so it's not like I'm showing them 18 different options at once, because, again, you don't want them to say, I need to think about it. And if you show them 18 options at once, and they're back and forth between 5 of them, and let's play with this one, play with that one, then they may end up needing to think about it because you just overwhelmed them with 4,000 different options. So I want to keep it very simple. I know I'm not going to be able to show them everything and every dollar amount, so I'm going to kind of take it down. And when I take my cost down, Brandon, I don't just eliminate riders right off the bat. I don't say, okay, the best way to make this cheaper is to take off return of premium and take off critical illness and take off all these other bells and whistles. No. I like to kind of start my second option, option B, by just lowering the death benefit down a little bit. And again, I'll go ahead and explain to them that, remember, this is a level benefit, so you won't always need $100,000. we could do $75,000 here and keep return of premium, keep critical illness on there. In critical illness, we could drop down a little bit less. So instead of getting, you know, 100% of the death benefit, we can give you 50% access to the death benefit, and that'll make it a little bit. So you still get critical illness, you just don't have as much. You still get death benefit, we just don't have as much. But we'll be able to keep return of premium on there. So I'll lower the benefits down a little bit before I'll start taking riders off. Remember, guys, most of the time, these people's most their favorite riders are the ones that involve them getting money. So I don't want to take off return of premium. That's like my favorite part about my policy, Brandon, not the part that involves me dying. It's the part where I get my money back. So if that's the first thing I eliminate to cut cost, then, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. Not to mention, you don't separate yourself from the rest of the agents out there, which are just going around trying to peddle, you know, just a simple term policy or something like that with no bells and whistles. So those bells and whistles really do a lot for them, and I like to keep them on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I explain my benefits, try to keep it simple, and then I'm basically, it's just a conversation at this point until you found that magic number.
Yep.
That makes sense, Brandon?
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Once I get the magic number, then I move into the close. Now I just need to fill out a few forms here, Brandon, ask you guys a few more health questions. This will just take a few minutes, and we'll be finished. Now, Brandon, what is your middle name?
Michael.
That's usually where I like to start at.
Yep.
So I start filling out the application. I don't usually try to go right for the Social Security number or something like that.
Right.
I like to start with some of the other information. And then once you're in the application, you're there. And then I'm going to go in after the application is done. In the outline of the presentation, I know that my next step is to secure the sale. And this is where I explain the process of what's going to happen now and what they can expect kind of moving forward from here, Brandon. And so I say, you know, I'm always making sure that they understand this could take about 4 to 6 weeks for the company to make a final decision. That way they're not calling me back in a week going, where's my policy at? I've already told them it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks. Now, if the insurance company does what a lot of them are doing right now, which is you issued the policy in 4 or 5 days or a week or a week and a half, then, you know, good problem to have, right? Now you're their best friend. The policy got issued quicker than we expected. But if you told them it was going to get issued in a week and it takes 3 weeks, now you're the bad guy. So prepare them for how long it's going to take or how long it could take. I let them know that as soon as I get the policy, I'll give you a call and we'll set up a time to get that policy out there. I like to deliver my policies. I think especially mm-hmm. as a new agent, it was a way for me to get back in front of them and get more sales. You know, maybe if I did help them with a temporary, like a term policy of some sort, like a mortgage protector, then I could get in there and say, now, what do you guys have permanently? Because remember, this policy is going to end at a certain point. What do you guys have permanently for life insurance? Do you have anything that is going to outlast all of your term coverage? And so it gives me a chance to ask questions like that, Brandon, which is a whole other conference call, whole other training.
Annuity questions or
annuity questions, referrals, stuff like that. The more you get in front of these people, too, the better your persistency is going to be.
Solidifies it, absolutely.
Solidifies it because you've gotten in front of them twice or maybe even three times for a third sale so, or for a second sale. So delivery is important. Draft date. Is also important. Usually monthly bank draft is how I do my policies, Brandon. And so I let them know that the draft date is going to be set up for the same time of the month that their policy gets issued. So if let's say your policy, Brandon, gets issued on the 15th, then most of these carriers are just going to make that your draft date.
Yeah.
Make sense? Now, if at this point they say, but I don't want it on the 15th, I'll say, okay, let's let the policy get issued. Call me. I'll call you when I get the policy. So remind me at that point, and if we need to change it, we can, after the policy gets issued. You don't want to change it before the policy gets issued because
could hurt your paycheck, couldn't it?
Could hurt your paycheck. Could hold up commissions pretty good. So try not to do that at all. Just after the policy gets issued, we'll change the draft date. Possibility of a phone interview. Brandon, these people, this insurance company, sometimes they'll do random phone interviews. They're just going to call you up, ask you the same health questions that I asked you. Just make sure that you give them all the information that you gave me. Don't offer up anything that's not necessary. So don't, you know, if they don't ask it to you, there's no reason to say it. But just give them just be honest with them and give them everything you gave me. So I'm warning them about that. I also, at this point, again, I'm going to say, Brandon, remember, they could decline you or if they could make changes or something like that to the policy. So if they do that, Don't worry. We know what your budget is. We kind of know what you're trying to accomplish with this coverage. There's a lot of other companies out there that I can find that'll take your money and give you good coverage, okay? So this is just option A. If plan A don't work, I got plan B, plan C, plan D already lined up in my mind. Okay, so please just don't take it out on me if they decline you. I'll help you. I think it looks good, but we'll see. Let's give it a few weeks. Let them look at it, all right? So I'm kind of getting them prepared for that. The more you prepare them for that, if it does happen, then, you know, you get in the door easier if you prepare them for it. If it gets declined and you told them it was going to get issued, no problem, then you're going to have some problems here. So I always try to make sure I warn them about that, and then I'm going to leave a business card. Brandon, I always get in the habit of leaving a business card on their fridge. I like them to see my – I like them to know my name. I've always had a hard time, even if I was sitting in front of somebody, Brandon, and they had a policy that I just thought was – and I could do way better, and I was in a situation where I might be able to replace and either save them a lot of money or get them a lot better coverage for the money they're paying for this other insurance company. If they know their agent's name off the top of their head without going looking for it, you don't replace that policy, because that agent probably is going to get back in there and try to convince them otherwise, or they're just not going to do it anyways because that agent has established a good relationship with that person for them to know their name. You know, he's made them a client for life, and that's my goal too. And so I like to leave that business card. I'm going to leave any required forms. And another thing I'll do when I get out of the home, Brandon, is I'll say, now, Brandon, did you guys fill out any more of these notices? And if he says, yes, we did, I'll say, okay, you got this taken care of. If anybody else calls you, just tell me that Casey Watkins took care of you. You're in good shape. Or if they say, no, I haven't filled out any more, I'll say, okay, you might get some more of them. At this point, you can just disregard them, just throw them away. And we won't be bothering you anymore. We got your coverage ready to go, so you can just trash all those, okay?
Gotcha.
I think that's important because they are going to get more notices, and it may not all be from our company. And so, you know, there are other companies out there that do mailings like that. So I want to make sure that I kind of eliminate the competition and kind of secure the sale there. Is there anything else you do, Brandon? I mean, those are kind of – and those may not be all in line. They're just kind of in my head as I'm going – out the door, and I may leave one out every once in a while, but I try to hit as many of those things as possible because it just helps secure the sale.
Yeah, and I think it's very important. You know, I think some people may think, you know, they're so excited about getting the sale that they want to get out of the house as quickly as possible, but this is,
yep,
you know, the ultimate goal obviously is not making the sale, it's getting it approved and getting it paid and getting it to stay on the books. And
exactly,
you've got to follow all of the steps in the process to make sure that happens, that you get the desired end result, I should say.
Exactly. Now, step number 9, the last step in here, again, it's just part of the end of the presentation here, is the 4 R's. This is where I'm going to, you know, really make my money. This is where I do my job at, Brandon. This is why I'm in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I try to do the 4 R's, or at least 2 out of 3, or 2 or 1 out of 4 of them, even if I don't make a sale. You know, the 4 R's are recruiting, referrals, retirement, and replacement. Those are 4 things in my mind I know that I can help them out with, and all 4 of them are important because it may not be all 4 of them that you get, but it's a numbers game. And so I'm going to go for that retirement. You know, I was sitting in front of somebody the other day, Brandon, sold them a $137 a month policy. I got an appointment to go back with them next week. They got $50,000 in an old 401k, just sitting there. Nobody's matching it. It's vulnerable. It's up and down. They say they're losing money, they're gaining money, they're losing money. So I said, let's put it somewhere safe. I'll be back out here next week. All I did was set an appointment. I don't know exactly what I'm going to offer yet. All I did was set an appointment. Same thing with referrals. You know, the person that asks for referrals most consistently is generally a person that's going to get them and get more of them and close more of them. We all need to get on the page where we're asking, we're doing these 4 things every single home we go into. And no matter what the home looks like, no matter if we think they have money or not, it's just don't get out. I think sometimes we get excited, especially when we're new, that we just made a sale. and we leave so much money on the table because of it.
Yeah.
When we've already established, you know, the reason people buy is because they trust you. And when they trust you, they like you. And when they like you, they'll just buy from you. And you've already worked, you've already done all the legwork. You've already paid for the lead. You've done the phone work. You've gotten the home. You've done everything. You've been yourself. You've established a good working relationship with them. You've got the emotion on the table. You filled out the application. You're there. They trust you. And you're leaving how much money on the table by skipping this ninth step? Brandon, this should be a training session in itself, is the 4 R's. Because, again, it's the most – I think it's after the application is the most important part. And I know, too, that the more sales I can get in the home, the better my policies are going to stay on the books. If I recruit the person, you better believe it's staying on the books.
Absolutely.
And not only that, what if they go out and turn into an agency that's going out and doing $25,000 a month in production? Or what if they don't do that, Brandon? What if they just go out there and part-time – do $5,000 of issue paid production a month, and I make a 10% override on that for helping them. Right?
Crazy, isn't it?
It's crazy to think that, and they're out there, guys. I've recruited them. Brandon's recruited them. We got some great people on this team that were homeowners that sent that form in, and so you got to make sure you do these 4 R's every time. But that's the last thing as I'm going through, to the door, Brandon. Is I'm making sure that I'm hitting those 4 R's: replacement, retirement, referrals, and recruit.
That's good, and we'll go over a lot more of that on a call coming up here in the future. But I tell you what, we should maybe hit real quickly is, you know, what are some common objections that maybe you get while you're in the home, and at what point will you see some of that stuff?
Okay.
I guess probably before we even get into objections, Casey, what would you do? I know you mentioned earlier about a one-legger. If you're sitting there with the husband and the wife is not there, what would you do if you run across that scenario? I mean, obviously we want to be sitting with both husband and wife. Let's say you show up to an appointment and the husband's there and wife's not.
If the wife's not there, I'll just say we really need to kind of get both of you guys together, and I'm going to go ahead and get it scheduled back in together. My time would be better. Some of you guys are going, well, I don't have another appointment until 5 o'clock, so I might as well go ahead and sit here. Maybe he'll buy it. Maybe he won't, but I ain't got nothing else to do for an hour. Really? Do you have your leads with you? Because in an hour, I can book 2 or 3 or 4 appointments, which is much more valuable to me than sitting
getting
there for an hour and getting to think about it because the wife's not there. I'm going to be on the phone. I'm going to be pink sheeting. I'm going to be driving around, knocking on doors of people that I could. I'm going to fill that hour up. And so you're thinking wrong if you're thinking I might as well just sit here and go ahead and try to sell them something. Get it rescheduled, which shouldn't be a problem. You're in the home. It's real hard for somebody to tell you no when you're sitting face to face. So go ahead and get it rescheduled, and come back, and then go sit in your car and make phone calls and book more appointments, or drive, go do some drive bys, or whatever you got to do, but fill that hour up. So that's what I would do, but I'm not going to sit there. I'm going to make sure both of them are there.
Let's talk about this. Here maybe are a couple of objections that might, you know, come up during the presentation, or may even come up, you know, after the presentation, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. You know, one that comes up early on that I think may derail a lot of people is, just so you know, I'm not going to do anything today. We're not making a quick decision. Or just so you know, we're just shopping around. Or, you know, you may get that when you're going into the Y or when you're verifying information. Or some people even throw it at you right when you walk through the door. How do you handle that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. That's a great question, Brandon, because that used to derail me as a new agent. Because it would just make me nervous at that point. Like, I want to make sure they're going to buy something from me before I go into this presentation. Even though it is only 10 minutes, I just don't want to. And so I would go ahead and try to start selling them on why we got to do an application and why this makes sense, and just start rambling on.
Yeah.
And what I learned was that I would end up talking myself out of most sales like that, and I would derail the whole presentation. Guys, what I learned was that those type questions are great questions. That means that they're the type of person that buy, and it's a defense mechanism that people have inside them that cause them to want to say things like that when you walk through the door. They know themselves. Remember, people love to buy, but they hate to be sold. This is a knee jerk that happens. I smile, I say, great, no problem. We'll be a few minutes here. Open up the laptop, go into step number one. I completely ignore it. I used to ramble on for 20 minutes, lose the sale. Now I completely ignore it. Show them the value of what they're doing. Help them to understand that this is the application process and this is how the work is done. And I sell the policy. 99.9% of the time when somebody tells me something like that, Brandon, either when it's walking through the door right at the beginning of the presentation, I walk out with a check.
Yep.
So don't get nervous. You should be happy because that person is the type of person that wants to buy, I promise you.
Exactly. Well, let's think about some objections that maybe you'll get kind of after the appointment. Like, even though you ask them that you don't want them to think about it, they can't tell you they have to think about it, it's probably still going to be the number one objection. Would you agree that they have to?
I would. And you know, Brandon, it's like there's really not that many objections. So I don't know what else you're going to throw at me after this one, because that's really the only other one that you might get. Is you know, I need to think about it, which to me is not really that big of an objection. I know they need to think about it. And so my mindset here, again, is first of all, if I get it a whole lot, it's probably a posture problem in that they don't trust me, and it's because they don't like me, and it's because I really haven't, I haven't done what I needed to do at this point, and I've somewhere along the way I've broken their trust or something like that, and so they just don't feel comfortable yet. Either
yeah.
way, there's something you can say to get over it. But in my mind, I'm sitting there going, I need to work on something. You know, so I'm always trying to figure out what I need to work on as an agent. What can I get better at?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say I do get it. And the better your script gets, Brandon, the better you do to think about it. Because remember, I already told you, don't tell me you want to think about it. Tell me if it costs too much or, you know, if whatever it is, just let me know and I can tweak it. Because generally, again, when people tell you they want to think about it is because it's a cost issue.
Yeah.
Or it also could be just a fear of obligation. It's usually one of the two things. Or they don't like you, and if that's the case, you might as well leave.
No way to get around that one, I'm afraid.
No way to get around that one. So, you know, my first kind of instinct, Brandon, when I'm getting ready to pull in the application is when you'll get that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just kind of ignore it. So, Brandon, I'm starting to fill out the application. Brandon, what's your middle name? You give me a couple pieces of information. You go, now, we're not doing this right now. Like, we kind of need to think about this. And I'll go, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'll keep filling it out. And if they say, I've had people just, that's it. They don't say anything else, and they go through the application. Now, if they kind of buck me again, I'm going to say, my kind of fallback to answering that objection, Brandon, has always been, yeah, absolutely. You know, I hope I didn't mislead you guys or anything like that into thinking that this was what we're doing was the coverage. This is just the application. You know, it's not really our turn to think about it yet. We have to let the insurance company think about it first. And so you're going to have plenty of time to think about this. You're going to have 3 weeks in underwriting to think about it. Now, you're comfortable with the budget, right? We already established that, and it fits the needs and everything? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff. You're going to have plenty of time to think about it. So this is just the application. We have to let the underwriters think about it first. Then it's your turn to think about it.
I like it.
So that's kind of what I think.
You can also kind of go, if they're still bucking it, a lot of times, Casey, I'll go into the, you know, well, I'll tell you like I tell every homeowner, there's, you know, two ways that you can think about it. You can think about it while you're protected, or you can think about it while you're not.
Yep.
And I've been doing this long enough to, I don't want to preach doom and gloom, but I've been doing this long enough to see, you know, people think about it a little bit too long. And, you know, there's no obligation. You know, why don't we fill the forms out, get them sent into the company. That way at least you're covered, you know, for the next 3 or 4 weeks while you're considering it. Hey, if it comes out that you want to do anything different, you want to raise the death benefit or change any of the benefits or anything like that, just give me a call. Not a problem. We'll get it fixed.
Yep.
So
I think between those two things, you got it. You know, I don't want to have something too scripted sounding, because then it sounds like I got it. I get that a lot from homeowners. So the first thing I do when I get objections is to almost like shock. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to steer you in the wrong direction. I thought I explained that, you know, this was just the application process. You know, this, we can't really think about nothing at this point because we don't even know if they'll do it for us. it's not really our turn to think about it. We got to let the insurance company think about it first, then it'll be your turn.
Right.
But if we need to make changes or anything, or if you have to cancel it, you know, if you have to do that, you have to, but this is not a binding contract. You know, if for some reason you get yourself in a position where you just can't afford it or it doesn't work, and, you know, we have to let go of it. Of course, it puts you back in square one where if you don't have coverage, then, you know, you don't have coverage. But, you know, and so I kind of talk them through it like that a little bit. Just, again, it's fear obligation. Try to alleviate that a little bit. I know we used to have a buddy, Brandon, that said when he got to think about it, he said, okay, and just flipped the lead over. He said, if you just give me your just give me your date of death, and I'll just call you back a few days before, and we'll just take care of it right before you die. So what's your date of death? Get a chuckle out of you. Instead of date of birth, date of death. I'll just call you back a week before. We'll come out. We'll write it up. You'll be covered.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Sometimes that's where humor can kind of go a long ways. If you can pull it off and do it the right way, get them to chuckle with you, then it breaks that tension. They like you, and again, when they like you, they trust you, and when they trust you, they purchase from you. So that's kind of how I answer those objections as far as the think about it goes, Brandon.
Yeah, and you're right. You really don't get many more than that. You know, we always say that there's two things you can't fix in sales, and that's broke and stupid.
Yep.
And I would say that stupid in our situation is, you know, maybe people that just don't care. So we could say instead of broke or stupid, we could say they just can't afford it, or they just really don't care what happens to their spouse, and you're going to run into that sometimes.
Which to us is stupid.
The stew out of you. Yeah, it is stupid. It'll frustrate the stew out of you, but don't let it. You know, you've done your job. That's why we say you're going to close 85 to 90% of them. You can't close all of them. And so, you know, Casey, you may be sitting in front of someone and you're going over the why, or you're verifying information, and they may say, you know, you may ask the question, well, what made you want to fill this form out and send it in? You know, what is our biggest concern here? What are we really trying to accomplish? And they may throw something back at you like, well, I don't know. You guys just kept sending them to me. I don't have any family. I don't care if this happens. I don't care if that happens. It doesn't happen a whole lot, but are you going to be able to flip that person usually?
I'll try. You know, I'll say, well, so if something were to happen, if you tell me if something were to happen to you, Brandon, that you just don't care, that your family be left with something that's going to help them pay for the mortgage? Nope. You know, when I'm gone, I'm gone. It doesn't really affect me, does it? No, I guess it doesn't. What about in case of a disability? you know, if there's a disability, like if you become injured or sick or something like that and you can't work, you know, are you going to be able to keep making the mortgage payment? No, I don't really care about that. Not a big deal. Well, yeah, Brandon, I'm with you, man. I can't really flip them at that point.
Yeah.
And I definitely, well, I know there's one R that I'm going to leave out, which is recruit them. At this point, I'm selective. You know, that is one R that I'm not asking about. I don't want them on my team. So that is that's a hard one. And again, Brandon, that's why we run 10, 12, 15 appointments a week, you know, because you're going to get people like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't sell them all.
Can't sell them all, buddy.
If we could sell them all, this would be easy. And if this would be easy, we'd all be making $6 an hour. I need people to tell me no. I need to walk out of the home feeling like I'm beat up about once or twice or three times a week. And every time I do that, I remind myself that this is why there's so much money in this business, is because I'm the type of person that can put up with this stuff, and I'm the type of person that can sit in front of somebody for 45 minutes and have them tell me no, and it drives me absolutely crazy that I can't talk them into it.
Yeah.
And the next sale, somebody porches me, and the next sale, a dog bites me. That kind of stuff I smile at now, because I know that that's the stuff that makes this business all worth doing, and it makes it be so much money in this business, is because if I can put up with it, then the money's on the other side.
You're exactly right, man. Other than that, I mean, what other I'm looking at my notes here, and I see bank draft. You know, you have some people that kind of balk on the bank draft. They don't want to do that. It doesn't really happen that often. One thing you can always say, Casey, is casually presented, casually taken, on overcoming most objections, either on the phone or in the home. But, you know, luckily with some carriers, we now have the option to do credit card billing, so they can do monthly billing on their credit card through American Amicable, through a couple of the other companies, Assurity. But do you have very many people usually that will balk at the bank draft? And when you do, You know, how do you handle that?
I guess I don't have very many people at all that do that. And if I do have somebody like that, then I just try to, again, very casually, yep, okay, so if you don't want to do bank draft, we can do annually if you want to do it that way.
Yeah, and you may have people that say, I don't like bank draft.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you got to listen to them, because like bank draft and won't do bank draft are two totally different things. So
yeah.
If somebody says, I don't like bank draft, I always say, we can always do annually. And that way you can just get it out of the way. I'd rather them do annually. I want them to do annual. And that's why I would not understand. If you don't say annually when you're asking for the check or asking for the premium and how they want to pay it, the mode, then you need to. You need to start every time saying monthly or annually, because if you don't ask them, then you won't get them. If you don't ASK, you don't GET. So you always want to make sure you ask, because your ratios of getting annual premiums are going to be a lot better if you ask for it. And you want annual premiums. Stays on the books better. And so, but if they don't, and sometimes I'll say, well, if you don't like bank draft, we can do annually. And they'll go, no, I like bank draft.
Right.
Because they can't afford to do a whole annual premium. Sometimes they'll say, I just really don't like bank draft. And I'll say, you know what, I'm the same way. I hated bank draft. Didn't want anybody messing with my checking account. But, you know, I figured, and that's 2010, all these companies are going to start doing that. And, you know, I've been working for these companies for a long time, and I've never really had any of these insurance companies screw up. You know, they're not out to scam people with bank drafts. You know, these insurance companies didn't get to where they did by doing that. They don't mess up with this bank draft stuff. So I've been doing it for a while with my insurance company, and this is the way everybody's going. So, and even after the policy gets issued, we can tell them what time of the month we want them to get it drafted on.
Yeah.
Is there any particular time of the month that would be better for you, Brandon? You know, so I'll kind of ease them into the bank draft right there. So that's one way I'll cover bank draft.
Really the only other way to do it. I mean, you know, it's not going to happen very often. Again, we don't want people thinking that it happens a lot. But when it does happen, you need to be prepared on how to handle it. And
I did have a guy one time, Brandon, wouldn't do it and didn't have enough money to pay annually. And I tried to overcome it, like we just said, and just did that whole spiel, and it didn't work. And I came back in and right after that, and I said, look, let's fast forward. Let's think about this for a second. Something bad happens. We know we need this coverage, right? You told me yourself that if something happened to you and you didn't come home and your wife would be in a bad position, right, as far as the mortgage payment goes. She'd lose the home. So just fast forward. Heaven forbid something happens to you. Wife sitting at the funeral, and you know that she would have had a death benefit had it not been for this whole bank draft situation. But that was the one thing that stopped your wife from having a paid-off house was a bank draft. Was just mm-hmm. this little issue. So let's not let this little issue get in front of us. You know, and cause us from not making a huge investment in your family. You know, it was something like that. But it made sense to him when you kind of look at the big picture and say, we're going to cause this little issue is going to cause huge problems later if something happens to you. So we can either make a small sacrifice now so that your wife doesn't have to make a big sacrifice later. Which one do you want? And, again, I don't want to put into anybody's head that you're going to get a lot of bank draft problems, because when it's in your head, sometimes you bring it on yourself more. So we don't want to talk about this bank draft stuff too much, but it does come up occasionally.
Right. Well, man, good stuff, buddy. Can you think of – am I missing anything? Can you think of any other –
I can't think of anything else.
Any other objections?
Not any common ones that occasionally get the crazy ones, but I can't even really think of any of those.
So no.
I guess that's about it.
Well, good stuff, man. I know we went way over time today, but we wanted to get this out so that everyone had a good copy of it. So, Casey, I appreciate it, man. It's good stuff. Always good listening to you and picking up more and more with it. But, you know, I've said it so many times over the past really 6 months to a year that I've never seen this business be any easier. meaning
yep.
that people, it's on their mind, they know they need the coverage. It's all about activity. If we can put ourselves in front of enough people, then our job really becomes simple. And so, man, I appreciate everything you said, buddy. It was really good stuff. So,
back at you, man. Thank you very much.
Yep. Guys, hope everybody has a great week. Let's set an all-time high. Go out and set the bar high for yourself. Project Roadkill's in full swing, so get out there and make it happen. Anything that we can do for you, don't hesitate to let us know, okay? Thanks, Case, man. Talk to you soon, buddy.
See you guys. Have a good afternoon.